Good morning, honey.
John, where are you?
Well, that's why I called. You know how I've been leaving the house every morning for the past year and not coming back until noon?
Yeah, I've been meaning to speak to you about that.
Well, I've loaded this application onto your iPhone, and it shows using GPS positioning exactly where I am. See that little round circle on your phone?
The blue one?
Yeah, that's me. And as you can see, I'm right in the studios of WNYC Radio.
You're back to that radio show story?
It's not a story. This application proves that when I leave in the wee hours of the morning, I go to this radio station, and you can see exactly where I am from now on.
Well, I could just listen to the radio, though, right?
Well, that's true.
Well, honey, I've got to get going. What's the name of the radio show again?
It's called The Takeaway, honey.
Oh, I'll check it out.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. That was my wife, Allison, courtesy of GPS positioning. I'm John Hockenberry. Daljit Dhaliwal is in for Adora Udoji. Good morning, Daljit.
Good morning, John. Good morning, everyone. And we're going to take perhaps a more serious look at GPS coming up a little later on in the program. Plus, Hillary Clinton's trip to Asia and bipartisanship. What bipartisanship?
Got that right. First, we got some headlines. President Obama will sign the economic stimulus bill into law in Denver today. For economist Peter Morici, the plan looks like a deep-fried chocolate-dipped Twinkie drenched in maple syrup, covered with powdered sugar, and served a la mode on a bed of Krispy Kreme donuts. Delicious as that sounds, it's not meant as a compliment.
We can give the economy a sugar high by spending too much money, basically borrowing it through a stimulus package. But as Paul Krugman pointed out, once the stimulus money is spent, then what? The answer is we sink back down.
The White House strongly disagrees. Of course, the president will promote the stimulus in Colorado and Arizona, deftly choosing states known for lean meat and healthy taco salads. Today is the deadline for U.S. automakers to explain their plan to pay back billions in government loans. Tough talks have gone on with the automakers and the UAW.
A new agreement in Darfur could pave the way out of the six-year conflict there, but there is still a long way to go. The main rebel group there has signed a deal with Sudan's government to have broader peace talks. An agreement to talk about making another agreement may not sound like much, but local leaders hail it as a large step forward. Hundreds of thousands of people have died in the Darfur fighting. Some 20,000 California state workers could lose their jobs. The state is nearly broke, facing a $42 million budget deficit, a $1 billion budget deficit. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger says layoff notices could go out as soon as today. Tense negotiations on a new budget have stalled.
Literally, apparently, California is running out of cash. We mentioned Twinkies and donuts earlier. We can add that champion swimmer Michael Phelps will not face pot charges in South Carolina. Phelps took a lot of heat for a photo showing him with a marijuana pipe. Phelps apologized without admitting to smoking. The local sheriff says there's no evidence to show Phelps broke the law. The Wall Street took yesterday off for the President's Day. The S&P begins trading at 8:26. Going back to GPS, would you actually want to have your movements monitored on a cell phone, on a friend's cell phone, wife's, girlfriend's? Having GPS know where you are, does that make you comfortable? Let us know at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. What's GPS doing for you?
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. So throughout the entire very long presidential campaign, it seemed like the second or third word out of every candidate's mouth was bipartisanship. We need to approach things in a bipartisan manner. Well, what's the word on bipartisanship on the day that the stimulus bill gets signed by President Barack Obama out in Colorado? Well, this word is delusional.
We're happy that Congress, in a bipartisan way, took steps to make whatever happens in this recession easier to take for the American people.
bipartisan. That's White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs talking about a bipartisan bill that only three Republicans voted for. The other word on bipartisanship, you might say, is scolding.
There's a time for quibbling, and there's a time for coming together. This was a time President Obama reached out to a large number of people. This was a time to come together. And, you know, I am disappointed.
That's Senator Charles Schumer of New York talking about how disappointed he is that Republicans didn't cross the aisle and vote for the stimulus package, except for three senators, no one in the House. So bipartisanship, what would we call this?
I know bipartisanship when I see it. I've participated in it. I've gone back home and gotten primary opponents because I wanted to be bipartisan. There's nothing about this process that's been bipartisan. This is not change we can believe in.
That, of course, is Republican Senator Lindsey Graham speaking over the weekend about bipartisanship. Does it even exist? Well, you need to be an archaeologist to find it in Washington these days. And joining us now is, I guess you wouldn't call her an archaeologist, really. Julie Mason is White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner, which is a free daily newspaper in Washington, D.C. She joins us from a studio in Washington, D.C. Julie, thanks for being a part of the program.
Good morning, John. I'm happy to be here.
Now, it sounds like Lindsey Graham is saying that the Democrats, froze out the Republicans. Is that a fair statement in your view of the events over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, they sure did. Bipartisanship sounds good. Voters like it. They like to Republicans and Democrats both like to talk about it all the time. But when it comes right down to it, Democrats won these last elections. They won them and big, and they don't feel like being partisan. When they talk about being bipartisan, what they really mean is Republicans need to capitulate. So in terms of succeeding in President Obama's promises to be bipartisan, this first outing on the stimulus bill was just a failure.
Of course, the Democrats' version, and I suppose if you put the scolding of Chuck Schumer aside there about how disappointed he is, they're suggesting that this is a strategic decision on the part of the GOP, particularly in the House, to basically keep their fingerprints off any of this stimulus business, because in 4 years, it's believed that the economy is still going to be in a pretty bad situation. And in 2 years, it certainly will be. And the House is all has to run again. So they're going to run on a message of not our fault.
Exactly. You know, the Republicans massacred.
You agree with that?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Republicans got massacred in this last election. They're looking for some issues to rebuild their party on. And Barack Obama gave them a Christmas present in this huge spending bill that for them, it's ideologically consistent to oppose this bill. Republicans, not in recent history, but, in building their party, being against big spending was something that they really believe in. So this was easy for them to oppose. And like you say, their calculation was the economy is not going to turn around in 2 years by 2 years from now when most of us have to run. So there's really nothing to lose in opposing this.
I guess, my ultimate question is, does government work better when bipartisanship happens? I mean, who cares about bipartisanship? Does better legislation, better policy get made when Republicans and Democrats are smiling at each other?
Well, there is a very strong strain of cynicism among those who believe that bipartisanship is a little silly and it's better for the government to be in gridlock because the less they do, the better the country is.
Well, I guess if the alternative to bipartisanship is gridlock, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But other people would say that the alternative to bipartisanship is a clarity of a mandate and a single party, a single sort of author producing legislative change. Maybe it doesn't work out, but at least it's clear. It's not gridlocked because things are getting passed by a majority.
Maybe so, but if you're out of that majority, if that majority doesn't represent your views, then I don't think you would support that. It's interesting. In Congress, there really aren't that many moderates anymore. So the country has gotten more partisan, as people have become more divided, Congress reflects that. So it's interesting that so many people, when you ask them, they say, well, I want Congress to work in a bipartisan fashion, when they themselves are so partisan for the most part. So it's interesting to watch this dynamic play out. And really, politicians talk about bipartisanship more than normal people do. They're the ones who push this issue. Obama, for example, I would argue that he raised the bar on bipartisanship and promised, maybe perhaps overpromised, what he would be able to do in terms of bringing both parties together.
So, Julie, if you see it that way, then why this pretense towards bipartisanship? I mean, what does it add to the national dialogue?
Well, it's very, again, it's very politically popular. When pollsters go out and they ask people, you know, do you believe in this? Do you think the parties should work together? Very strong response. Yes, the parties should work together. So it's something that politicians talk about a lot, but it's something they find very hard to do. Reagan had great success.
Well, let's talk about Reagan in a moment, but I just want to go back on that. When pollsters ask that question, that everyone likes bipartisanship, it reminds me of like when you ask parents, you know, you prefer that your kids not fight. Of course, you prefer that they don't fight, but you're not gonna get rid of them. It seems like such a poorly phrased question.
Well, again, I do think there's a bit of a backlash developing to this notion of bipartisanship. We heard Nancy Pelosi in the final throes of the stimulus bill sort of shrugging it off and saying, you know, bipartisanship, that's a process argument. We're working here. This is work.
Well, let's talk
so
process.
That might be an emerging theme.
You mentioned Reagan, and that's a really important point because there was divided government during the entire 8 years, if I'm not mistaken, of the Reagan administration. Mm-hmm. And a lot of important policy got passed, even though there was a sense rhetorically that gridlock was going on. What do you think was the key in making the Reagan administration period work? And again, that was a recession in the early 80s.
Right. Reagan came in with a terrible economy, just like Obama, and he was able to get his tax cuts passed in part by really horse trading with the Democrats and allowing them to turn his bill into, they called it a Christmas tree. They could put their pet projects right on his tax cuts, and then it went through. But now, in the current political climate, you know, earmarks are second perhaps only to lobbyists as public enemy number one. And that's another situation that politicians have created by demonizing earmarks and demonizing lobbyists. So now they weren't able to do that with this bill. There really was not a lot of horse trading. There was a little bit. Republicans were able to add some of the tax cuts that they wanted onto Obama's bill, but really nothing like the scale we saw during the first Reagan term.
Do you think things would be different if it wasn't a two-party political system, if there were a third player, a third national player in American politics? I mean, would that sort of ease things up, and could we really talk then about being truly bipartisan?
It's hard to see. First of all, I don't think the two parties would ever allow a third party in. I mean, they're just so powerful, and then these third parties just have such a hard time getting traction. But I think that actually might muddy the argument. I mean, more voices are always better, and a more robust argument is better than one party just marshaling everything through. But it's hard to imagine that that would be a more effective system.
And I guess bipartisanship looks a lot like one party. If the two parties don't have a difference, then what is the point of even a two-party system? Well, before we go, I want to sort of reiterate the point that you just made in that the earmarks that have been so trashed by both parties in this election amount to a kind of currency that actually allows bipartisanship to work. If you talk about the Reagan example, he allowed earmarks, which is why the deficit spiked so much during the Reagan years. But when John McCain says get rid of pork, what he's really saying politically is get rid of the currency whereby politics gets transacted in Washington. Is that what you're saying?
Right. That's a really good point, John. That's exactly what I'm saying. And earmarks and this kind of horse trading, it's gone on for so long. Now they have to think up a new name for it because it's really the way things get done. But in these last few election cycles, the notion of earmarks has really penetrated the public consciousness and has really become demonized.
Well, that's a spectacular takeaway on this whole question, because I was actually going into this segment going, bipartisanship, I would much rather talk about paint drying than bipartisanship. But it's really interesting. I mean, on the one hand, it's not going to work unless we bring back earmarks or the White House is the opposite party of the majority party in Congress. Is that a fair takeaway here?
That's a very fair takeaway. Absolutely. They have to really make some serious trades and really get down to it in order to be truly bipartisan. Just talking doesn't get it done.
All right. Julie Mason, White House correspondent for The Washington Examiner, with a very interesting take on this notion of bipartisanship. It may not exist, but there are very good reasons why. Julie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So, and Julie, are you on GPS, by the way?
No, currently, John.
Do you care?
To be by the end of the week, though, after
this show.
Do you care
if, like, your relatives or the producers on this program know where you are all the time on your cell phone?
Well, I feel like they do a little bit, but not with GPS. But the whole idea makes me very uncomfortable.
Well, we're going to send one to your editor there at the Washington Examiner. Anyway, Julie, thanks for joining
us. Thank you for that.
Sure. We want to remind our listeners that we are asking questions about, do you care if GPS knows where you are at any given point, and who would you give that information to? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.com.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.